Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast, where two mental health therapists and a fitness coach explore the interweaving connections of mind, body, and spirit. Every episode covers an area of this connection and how we can reimagine ourselves and our world when we see these connections more clearly.
Hey, everybody. Deborah here with Melissa and Shauna and special guest Matt Richardson today, and we're talking about movement as therapy. We're continuing in our series on using movement as a way to heal from trauma. So if you missed our previous episode where we sort of outlined our basic thoughts about why movement and exercise is so important to recovery and to emotional healing, go back and have a listen. We'll be reviewing a few of those concepts today, but we're really going to focus today on drumming. Matt Richardson, our guest, is here with Resonate, which is his organization that brings drumming to the masses. And so we have a lot of questions for him today about the movement of drumming. So here we go. So basically, just to kind of recap a little bit, we've been talking about how when we go through traumatic experiences, they affect not only the mind, not only the emotions, not only our spirituality, our thoughts, but most definitely our bodies, because every event is a physiological event. Everything we experience comes through the sensory system and becomes coded as sensory, as motor memory, and is a physiological event. So movement of all kinds can really stimulate growth and change and can be the perfect adjunct to whatever kind of psychotherapy that we might be doing. I know that when I'm working with people who are in trauma recovery, I'm always trying to talk them into coming to a workout class. Please exercise. I really want you to exercise. And it's kind of, you know, a funny fine line because they're there for psychotherapy and they're there for EMDR. But I know, because I've experienced it myself, that movement is really going to give them more bang for their buck. They're really going to get better faster if they're moving. So that's kind of in the background today. And we want to talk about drumming. And we've all experienced it in this room. We've all experienced a drum circle with Matt. So let's just kind of start off. What exactly is drumming, Matt?
Well, thanks for having me. You know, the first thing I would say, and you all have experienced the drum circle, so it's really neat that you're able to chime in whenever is appropriate. But, you know, really drumming, it goes back hundreds of thousands of years. You know, really, it's one of the most ancient, if not the most ancient, practice that has been recorded through cave art, you know, paintings, all sorts of things all over the world. And so, you know, and especially in different cultures, you think about Africa or Brazil or, you know, China, they have used the drum for a lot of different forms of healing. It's been used to bring people together. Even today, one of the big things coming right now is in the corporate environment, they use it for team building and things like
wow,
that.
That's
yeah,
cool.
Toyota Motor Company, they use it in their headquarters. And
they have a drum circle.
Yeah.
Toyota.
Panda Express.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It's pretty wild, some of the stuff that they use it for. So it's great for bringing community, bringing people together. Drumming has also been used as a healing measure in what now we consider alternative medicine or integrative medicine, but you know, really by healers for a long, long time. And it's interesting to hear how you describe the emotions and everything within the body and physiologically how that affects us. So if you think about it, the way that we have you know, our chest work with either an EKG or, you know, our heartbeat can be measured in an electronic manner. Well, if you think of it, those are waves, right? The electronic emissions that are coming from us, just like the resonance of a drum looks like the ripple in water, you know? So the way that those waves interact really can explain a lot of why we see some of the efficacy in drumming. So it's pretty neat, you know, from a cultural standpoint all the way down to a scientific standpoint. It's been used in a lot of ways.
It just felt so good. And I couldn't really explain it, but the other night when we were drumming in this very room, I just was losing myself in just how fun it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just sort of, it's like a childlike activity. You sort of feel like a mm-hmm. kid.
It's relaxing. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Kind of takes you out of yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Well, it's funny you say it's like makes you feel like being a kid because yes. we really step into that same place. It's playful. You mm-hmm. know, if you think about it, we talk about music and playing music. We play music, you know. We don't business mm-hmm. music. We play music.
We don't work music.
Right. You know. So it's very much childlike, and I think mm-hmm. that's the beauty of it, is it allows us to attach to our inner child and mm-hmm. find that, you know, exuberance of exploration, and, you know, you find out what happens when you hit it really hard or really soft mm-hmm. or whatever the case might be, and that discovery, I think, is just like being a child.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of buzzing. It's buzzing next to you.
Yeah.
You can feel, like if you're sitting there with it against your knees, you can feel the buzzing in your knees and your legs and
the energy. Yeah. And that feeling of, you know how like when you're on a boat and you get off the boat and you're still rocking? Mm-hmm. I feel yeah. like drumming does the same thing.
Yes.
Where even after
the
you've stopped,
legs.
You still, yeah. Well, and you feel like up your arms, you feel the hum yeah. in your arms and yeah.
Well, that's an interesting segue. So, you know, one of the healing capacities as far as the drums, and a lot of times I'll bring that to people's attention afterwards, that vibration that they feel in their arms mm-hmm. or especially in their arms when you've been drumming. But you can almost feel it like kind of resetting you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And one thing that they've done with cancer patients, they found, it was a study 17 years ago, but it basically showed at the cellular level, they did biomarkers before and after playing drumming for an hour. And they could show where in cancer patients their white blood cell count was higher than it was when they started.
That's so interesting.
I know. And, you know, you think about that. And again, kind of thinking in the mental picture of those sound waves coming through the air. And then you think about how your arms vibrate after. Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. You're kind of encapsulating that sound wave mm-hmm. that's come through. So mm-hmm.
if you think of everything as vibration, then we are changing ourselves. If we are vibrational
yeah.
and we're causing vibration through this instrument, we're causing ourselves to vibrate differently, mm-hmm. which is changing our right. ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, it's like tuning, right? A tuning fork. Mm-hmm. Or even a string gets out of tune. Sometimes we have to tune it back to get into the right pitch that we're working at our maximum or optimal.
I love that image of we just have to like retune ourselves when we get out of tune a little bit.
Right. Right?
Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah.
And I also can't wait for science to catch up and explain this, you know? Like, you know, someday we're going to understand this better.
There's a lot of studies on it. So yeah. there's a guy named Richard Schultes, I believe, that did a study on spatial recognition. So mm-hmm. they did this with birds, flocks of birds or schools of fish and that type of thing. It's the phenomenon, like, how can they fly so close together mm-hmm. and still manage to go a million different directions, up, down, sideways, you know, at the drop of a hat?
Yeah.
And, you know, what they found was we each have, you know, kind of our own vibration that comes out from our body, just the same way that your heart, you know, can trigger that on an EKG mm-hmm. or, you know, an MRI. We can see the waves and the scans within the mind, just the different aspects of that. So within that field that we have next to each other, that's what they were able to show, is that basically if you have the same molecular makeup, you easily connect those vibes. They had, this is slightly different or side note, but they had a issue where they took yogurt, and they could see how if they had two yogurt cultures from the same batch of yogurt, that if they fed one of the bits of yogurt, that the other would actually kind of show, under a microscope, it would show indication of being hungry.
And it was jealous.
It was jealous, yeah. And the only way they could hide it was by putting a huge thing of yogurt in between both cultures. Yogurt knows yogurt.
Huh.
And so, you know, they had scientists that did this huge experiment, and they're like, we've put steel in between it. We've put, you know, concrete. We've put all this. And it always reacts when we start feeding one of the cultures. But whenever you put a mass of yogurt in between, you know, it's almost like its worst enemy. You know, it can't. Uh-huh. It'll feel it to an extent like we do when we're out of tune, mm-hmm. but you know, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to affect the rest of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting.
There was a book that came out probably a little over 10 years ago called "The Body Has a Mind of Its Own," in which those researchers discussed body mapping in your peripersonal space, and when you were moving or participating into an activity, the space around you or any object that you were using became an extension of yourself. Mm-hmm. It's like I told, was talking to Deborah earlier, where if we had a tall cowboy hat on and we were walking through a low door, even though that cowboy hat is not part of our body, we instinctively duck. Mm-hmm. We know how to go underneath the door. Spatial recognition. Yeah. And that, you know, basically you're saying the same thing when we are body mapping into the drum and then the drum is feeding back in that peripersonal space and then resetting at a neurological level.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, you think about that energetic field, if you will, that we have around us, that those vibrations come in and out of. That's, you know, we talk about trauma, different pieces of trauma. And in the kind of ancient cultures or the healing cultures, they think of it that way, that trauma clings onto us in that energetic field. And so the only way you can disrupt it is by jolting it, you know, shaking it. Any vibration, there's lots of different ways that trauma can be released. But, you know, it's funny, we're talking about movement and music. And what hit me is we talk about the analogy of just the word move, right? Movement. Well, when we say what moves you, we're talking about emotional, right?
Yes.
We're not talking about physically or what foot goes in front of the other. It's, you know, what pulls at your heartstrings. Well, that's a form of movement, but we're talking about it analogously. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting comparison.
Well, so walk us through what you think happens emotionally when we're doing drumming. How are we resetting our emotional tune?
Sure. You know, so to put it in a simple manner, you're having fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that we go back to that childlike and that play, you know, the act of play. And that in itself is fun. There's lots of studies that show how fun is good for the body and how it makes you happy. The interesting thing is, too, especially for people who would start the drum circle saying, I'm not a musician or I'm not a drummer or that kind of thing. Well, those folks, especially, you have fun when you realize you do have rhythm and drumming in you. You know, and I haven't met anybody yet that I was like, wow, you should not have come to this class. So,
right.
You know, I mean, there's by the end of it, from start to finish, there's always, and you can usually see pretty early on the one who is just going to be amazed at the end that they actually held a rhythm or, you know, contributed to the group. And so, but when you do that, you know, we talk about, what is it, you guys help me, it's the pineal gland, right? Mm-hmm. Serotonin, dopamine. So whenever we're at a literal level doing those things and engaging in that, whether it be a little bit of challenge, when you get that bit of reward after a few rounds of playing the same rhythm and you're like, oh, I can do this. Well, you're starting that body's natural ability of making yourself happy, you know, letting the serotonin, letting that dopamine down.
Well, and Deborah, I don't know if you've thought about this, but we do EMDR, which uses bilateral stimulation. And when I think of drumming, I think, well, this is such a natural version of back and forth stimulation for the body. And what we know about what that does, at least in part for the brain, is it turns on the hippocampus, which is the part of our brain that is in charge of emotional digestion. And so I sometimes wonder if we have something that's kind of locked in that part of his inner emotional system that is yet to be processed, that drumming is such an intense kind of bilateral stimulation that it turns that part of our brain on and begins that digestion process. We don't have to be thinking about it. We don't have to be, you know, going after it consciously or with our logic, but that system is like hungry and waiting to digest that stuff. It doesn't like it to just sit there. And so given the opportunity, it will do it, and it will do it really spontaneously.
Sure.
I don't know if you thought about that with the back and forth.
Yeah, then like EMDR in everyday life. I love the concept of just finding EMDR and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Bilateral stimulation in everything, in exercise and in just all different kinds of activities where you have a back and forth. Maybe you're rocking yourself in a rocking chair. I love that idea. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I thought of this morning was, you know, we think about trauma responses. We've got fight, flight, and freeze. And, you know, generally we're doing one of those things. And the problem with that, according to Peter Levine, who developed somatic experiencing therapy and has written a number of books on the subject, is that, you know, there's an excitation period when you're being stressed out, and then there should be a release, but humans and our social order kind of gets in the way of that release. which if you're watching animals in the wild, they are doing movement to release that feeling.
Have you, there's a really neat article I read about it, but there's a video that they put with it, and it shows a gazelle in the Serengeti, right? Mm-hmm. And it's talking about that same thing. And so basically this is where it runs. Mm-hmm. It's running from a lion, I think. And then goes to where a watering hole is, but ends up having to jump because there's a crocodile. Mm-hmm. So it's basically about to get eaten twice. Mm-hmm. And it jumps across, makes it over the river. It's safe. And just even on the other side of the river, it just takes a second, shakes itself off really wildly.
Yeah.
You know, and that shaking, it's literally getting that energy. So think about like when you've had a trauma, right? And you're buzzing, right?
Yes.
You get all that same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So when we're a baby or a child, you know, you recently had, and we're about to have one as well and have had. So, you know, you see a little baby that sometimes they'll hear a sharp noise.
Yeah.
And they you know, tense up
they
really
shudder.
Quick and they shudder and then they... Mm-hmm. They shake. Mm-hmm. And it's like the older we get, you know, because of the way our society or culture or whatever is, you know, expectations of work and business and all that kind of thing, we're expected to give immediate reactions and responses that are intelligible and blah, blah, blah. And we don't give ourselves that chance to shake and we kind of lose that. So we end up becoming a pile of emotional trauma.
Right.
We don't give ourselves.
We even use the term shake it off.
We need a moment to shake it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we don't give ourselves that courtesy.
The moment to do that, like something as human as like, I was thinking about blowing of noses. Like this is allergy season for lots of people. And
it's so intimate.
It is so. and we have a thing about that.
Yeah.
So I'm at the concert Saturday night and, you know, around me are people who are coughing and sneezing and things. And I'm just noticing how polite we are about that, that very human thing. We don't want to put anybody out with our bodily responses.
Mm-hmm. I think it's about control. I think that we don't like to lose control of our bodies or even have the perception of losing control of our bodies.
Right.
Because I think sometimes like when you're doing work with someone, and Shauna, I'm sure that you encounter this when somebody is working really hard physically and their body isn't doing what they, you know, what it's supposed to be doing, that they get really easily frustrated and they want to stop. They want to shut it down. Or if you're doing trauma work and someone gets a big emotional response, they want to shut it down. They're reaching for tissue immediately.
Yeah, they're apologizing.
Yes. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't get that right.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that in front of you.
Yeah.
And I think that that to me says we're not okay with losing control of our body, which means we're not okay with giving our body permission to externally process any of the stimuli that's, you know, coming in and traumatizing us. And drumming kind of gives it a way to lose control a little bit, and maybe in a socially acceptable way.
That's a really good point, because, you know, one thing I always tell people, beyond the fact of, you know, there really aren't any mistakes, what we do, it's just a matter of going through the process. But you know, it's interesting in the Western mind, when we teach music, we teach it in very linear, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4,
theory.
Or 6, 8, or paradiddles and groovediddles and all this. And,
it's fun to say.
Yeah, I know. I always go to paradiddles. But you know, if you go to the African culture, they don't explain rhythms in numbers. They explain it as a cyclical pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So in their mind, it's a circle, what they're about to show you or tell you or, you know, that type of thing. So for us, you know, we get so caught in that linear that we don't have that moment of realizing there's another opportunity coming back around to do it again and do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you know, you think about muscle memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't let yourself fail, are you learning, you know, the best way, or, you know, reinforcing it?
Right. Resetting patterns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing, you know, if we're drumming, not in the traditional drum circles that we do, but you know, growing up as a drummer, you know, if I couldn't get a rhythm down or couldn't get a beat, I would do it again, but I'd do it much more slowly. Mm-hmm. So I want my muscle memory to be correct in the pattern, but I, you know, give myself that space. And, you know, I'm a big advocate. I talk to a lot of people about this, that the way we are today, we're so immediate. Everything is right now. So, you know, if you think of an emotion, an emotional response, it's a reaction. There's no question about that. But it's also it's also kind of the most basic primal form of thought, really. That's your body's response to what the situation is and telling you, you know, especially if you feel stressed or angry or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's your body saying, this isn't in line with the way that you want to be, right, or with the way you are. And so, you know, because of the way our society has become and everything's immediate, we a lot of times don't give ourselves time to respond or react or really think through. And I think a lot of times, or at least this has been my experience, a lot of times I give a really poor response to something, or I go off of that reaction instead of really thinking through and thinking, yeah, you know what, that's not really a battle I want to fight, or that's not a battle I can really argue. you know that sometimes you end up picking up someone else's argument because you're in this, in the heat of it, and you grab onto it and you go, and then you're like, man, I really didn't want to argue about that. Like, or you get down the rabbit hole and realize that the end of the argument really isn't something you believe in, right, but you're already committed to it. So right, we have this pride ego thing.
I've chosen my side.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give you room to back out and reset.
Well, and also if you don't let yourself have room to fail, then you don't have discovery for new rhythms or beats or dance movements.
Yeah.
And you're talking about not being able to let go and take right, control. And unless, if you look at dancing around a drum circle, unless it's traditional where they're telling a story, there's this freedom of movement where in Western culture, if we go to the ballet or we go to a performance, everything is set.
Right.
And then if you go to a concert, you see people just letting go of ambitions and just dancing and moving and letting the music wash over them and letting feeling come out, which we don't often do anymore as we get older. Yeah.
And if we're trained to be, you know, good professional people and good girls and
good girls and good boys,
we don't ever let it go. I don't ever let it go.
Well, I'm curious. Okay, so question for both of you. What role do you think our fear of looking foolish plays, both in drumming and in exercise and in dance? Because immediately, as I'm trying to imagine myself in these situations, that's the first thought is, well, I don't want to look like an idiot, right? And I know that for a lot of people, that's the number one block to a lot of this stuff is, I'm going to look dumb when I try to do this.
Yeah. Because when we're children, think about how kids just move and they don't think about it. And then at some point we're told, don't do that, or you need to behave, or you're disrupting somebody.
That
and
looks dumb.
We became aware of
our fears. Being dumb.
And we become aware of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that has a huge part of it. I think that's why a lot of people don't want to walk into a fitness facility. Well, what if I do something wrong and I look stupid? Or
what if I make up the weights this way?
I'm going to embarrass myself. Mm-hmm. When really most mind-body studios are a non-judgment zone.
Right.
And we're here to help you with those movements.
Yeah. It's not expected that you already know, and yet we expect ourselves to already know.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I find interesting, and I wondered if this happens in drum circles, is a lot of times people don't know that there is a held emotion or trauma trapped in their body. And instead of coming from you, the two of you, saying exercise would be a good release, they come to me and have an experience where they may start crying or experience emotion and not understand what's happening. And it's that release of tension in the body through movement. And I'm curious if that happens. You see that happening in drumming as well.
Yeah, I think so for sure. You know, it really is one of those deals where people come into it with sometimes with expectations, sometimes not. But either way, when you get into it, you're forced to be present. You know, you can't copy a rhythm if you're thinking about, did I pay that bill? You know, I mean, it just doesn't work out. So, but I think that's absolutely right, is that you'll see people who finally let themselves be present, meaning I'm not worrying about all the crud that happened, you know, this week, this year, you know, last 5 years, whatever. And it, you know, somehow through that, they find either in themselves something they didn't expect to see, like I can play a drum or whatever. And it just, it's a light switch. It hits something, whether they would tell anybody or not, it hits something that is typically an emotional release. You know, it's funny, some of the stuff I've just recently learned about drumming with drum groups and how to apply it really gets into more of processing questions, which is awesome because it's kind of where I started with it. I've gone through this big cycle and how I'm thinking of running these circles. But it generates a lot more... it's a lot more provocative, I think, in the sense of finding the similarities in our day. You know, there's a fun game that we do sometimes as an icebreaker, and it's passing shakers, like rattles, you know. And, you know, you speed up, we go faster and faster and faster, and inevitably, right, we're going to drop one. because we're just blindly handing back and forth mm-hmm. in a circle to the people next to you. And it's amazing, some of the people that I've heard talk about it since we're doing these, you know, some people handle it differently. Some, you know, you ask, well, so what did you think about that? Usually a lot of people are thinking, oh, that was fun. Oh, we got really fast, you know. And then you get a few people that are like, that was so stressful. Mm-hmm. They kept coming, and I just couldn't get it out of my hands. Mm-hmm. And then I dropped one, and I wanted to reach for it, but you said not to. And so then I was, it was just, I was so stressed. And, you know, you think about that, and it can be with, you know, working out. It can be with a lot of things, but I find drumming, and you were just talking about this EMDR being close to mm-hmm. everything that we do. Well, drumming is as well.
Yeah.
You know, we let things drop a lot of times. They hit the floor. You can't help it. Or sometimes you need to let one drop, even though you know you could probably catch it now if you wanted to.
But you just move on. You have to just keep going.
Do I let it go or do I not? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, you know, what you see people come out of that with. You know, and if you can get them to talk about it, that's where I think the true bits of trauma start to come out. And, you know, it's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree with that 100%.
It's like so much of the fear around doing things like this is a fear of what will come out of me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what other people will see and potentially judge as it comes out of me.
And what they'll find out about me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll reveal something and it'll be unsightly or unsavory. Mm-hmm.
You know,
turn away.
So a lady that I was just at her training on some of this stuff, she did actually founded this work, the effects of drumming on people. But she's done in Iran, in the conflict zones. She's done drumming groups, drumming circles with Palestinians and Israelis for conflict resolution. Completely different languages. You know, they get these people into a room, and she can't, you know, they've got like three translators just to get one message across,
right,
kind of thing. And it's fascinating because what she immediately did, started out with, was just a question, who can show me how hate feels? And don't say it, say it on your drum. And so, you know, you can imagine, and in my mind, I can see a big raucous kind of a, you know, yes, banging away. And then she would have somebody from the opposing side do the same thing. And eventually would have these two people having a conversation through the drum and leading in the way of, okay, so how would you respond to that? You know, show us what would be a rhythm of love for you. And, you know, by the time it's all said and done, these two individuals who were literally probably killing each other the week before are at a place where they can combine and make music together.
Oh,
and,
cool.
You know, and they don't even speak the same language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's transcendent.
That makes me tear up just thinking about it. It's really neat.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead and plug your website for us.
Resonate is youresonate.org, youresonate.org. And go check it out. We've got some videos out there of some of our early stuff that we've done through the Bodysmith and some about information. There's mm-hmm. about what we're trying to do as an organization, and a little bit about me, but that's not the important mm-hmm. part. So,
well, if people want to learn more about how they can do drumming, mm-hmm. will they find that on your website?
You know, it's funny that you say that. So just this last week, I've started pooling some articles and things I want to put out there as a resource page on there for people that are just kind of in that discovery phase. Mm-hmm. You know, the easiest way to get into it is just to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, just to come into one of the drum circles. And I don't know, we're working on a lot of different things as far as getting some different availabilities out there on time. And mm-hmm. but, you know, gosh, I don't know. And I'm a good example to plug this. You can find a drum circle just about anywhere if you Google it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she loved this. My wife and I went to Destin, Florida, and I found a drum circle.
Awesome.
And she was like, that's what I want to do on my vacation. but it was good. You know, we went, and I've never been to a drum circle where there just weren't really nice people. You know, that's the best thing I can think.
Yeah.
Sometimes a little odd. But,
that's okay.
God is okay.
Odd in a good way.
It's good.
Odd and ugly.
So, Matt, you talked to us about drumming and releasing emotions and how trauma and healing, but what about the connection with drumming and spirituality?
You know, it's kind of one and the same, because truthfully, drumming, the first, the origins of it really go back to shamanic practice, and shamanic being shamanism all around the globe. The term shamanism came from Tibet, or was coined there anyway, but it's used loosely across the world. And so shamanic healers use the drum. It's easy for us to think of it in a way here as Native Americans. You know, you look back at the powwows and they've got the big drum out and they're drumming. And it's interesting. I was reading an article recently about the Native American drumming and how their dancing and movement in that pattern is really storytelling anymore. It's not used in quite the same way that it once was, where it was really like a large group healing that they would do for the tribe. You know, in Africa, the djembe, the meaning of the word loosely is to come together. And so the community comes around the djembe to find those. Something else that was really neat and I got to experience recently was in some of those cultures, whenever they have someone who is having a bad day, you know, or just things aren't going well, whatever the case, they bring the individual into the center of the drum circle and they play the rhythm of that person's name.
Oh my goodness.
So for instance, my name is Matt Richardson, right? So Matt Richardson, that's the rhythm of my name. Now, yeah, I could do it 100 different ways, but that's how I chose to say it. So, but you know, they bring that person in to uplift them and to hold them and to help them, you know, just feel better. The funny thing is this practice is used in our health rhythms drum circle. And they've talked about going into like at-risk youth, into inner cities and things like that, and lots of different situations. But it's funny with the at-risk kids, they'll say there was a story about one of them who she was 16, 17, and you can imagine, I mean, just, you know, throwing a temper tantrum basically, didn't want to be there. They made her go, all this kind of thing, and she got mad, picked up her stuff, and walked out. And the facilitator said, well, you know, that's fine if you don't want to participate, but I can't really let you disrupt everyone else. And so, of course, she didn't like that. And one of the participants said, you know, maybe we should drum her name. And so they did. They started drumming her name, and the girl came back a few minutes later bawling. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about that. And she said, no one ever says my name. And I heard you guys drumming my name.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And they were playing her song.
They were playing her song, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's amazing. But it's a really simple expression. But I think that that's exactly how the ancient people figured it out. How they came to it and found it to be healing was that, you know, we talk about the vibration in your arms. We talk about this. They've known something for a long time before we ever had science to really back anything up.
And I have to notice that this is practiced in a circle too, and I've thought a lot about just the circle aspect of it—the fact that I'm on one side of the room and you're on the other, and we're facing each other doing this thing. We can see each other, and it's not like you're studying each other, but you're very aware of each other.
Mm-hmm. That's so funny you said that. So I just learned the Lakota, if I'm saying it right, I think it's the Lakota. They believe that when you come into circle, that the person across from you is the mirror of you at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you have an immense amount to learn from the individual across from you. So your seat across from you is always chosen for you before you show up.
It's not random.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That really speaks to the spiritual element of that. And I was wondering about what you say to people, particularly around here, who might be a little, you know, scared, a little worried about the spiritual implications of the drumming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of obvious that it is spiritual. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if they have been raised in a tradition that maybe is spooked by stuff like that, what would you say to them?
Don't freak out.
Don't freak out.
No, you know,
just
honestly,
keep reading.
I grew up in the Pentecostal Church of God, which is about as far as you could get from all that. So, from that being okay, and so let me just share how I've talked about it with my family. You know, first off, it took me a while to come out of the closet, basically.
As a drummer.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, I ended up playing drums in the church. That's how I got into it to start with. Yeah. We needed a drummer, and I couldn't sing to save my life.
They do have drums in their church.
Oh, yeah. Well, keep in mind, so Pentecostal Church of God, and I don't think anybody would be upset with me saying this, like, that's Holy Rollers.
Oh, the Holy Rollers.
Yeah, the Bible thumping, rolling down the aisles.
It seems like they would like your drum circle.
I think so. I do think so.
But you felt like you had to come out of the closet with your family?
Well, so they're part of the evangelical movement. So it's very much fire and brimstone and, you know, vengeful God type approach and that type of thing. And that's where they come from with that. So thinking of it, well, so I'll say this. This is the best analogy I've gotten. This is what I told my very, very dear cousin. So totem poles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different animals' heads on top mm-hmm. of each other. Well, in a Christian or in a religious basis, that would be idolatry.
Yeah.
Right? So what I've learned in my experiences with shamanic work is that they do highly regard the animal world or what's known as animism. And the idea really behind it is just that all the animals, they have a spirit as well, just mm-hmm. like we do. And I think this is partially where the Christian science diverts with it. But mm-hmm. but from an animal perspective, if you think about it, going from a fish to a llama to a dog, you know, whatever, they all have their MO. They're very true to their nature.
Okay.
But we were talking earlier about humans. We have our self-awareness. That's what animals don't have. And that self-awareness through either culture or uh-huh. Gucci or whatever else uh-huh. brought
Church.
Us to, you know, yeah.
Culture and Gucci.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we aren't true to our nature. That uh-huh. creates that conflict sometimes. Uh-huh. But go ahead. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about circles and spirituality. And I grew up in not a spiritual family. My parents were Catholic, both had been divorced, excommunicated from the church.
Mm.
Therefore, with one thing leading to another, we grew up learning about religion, but not in a spiritual family. Mm-hmm. And yet the most spiritual experience I've had in my life is I was actually fortunate enough to participate in a Sundance ceremony in Oklahoma.
That's
in which it is not. And you're in a circle. There are the musicians, the drummers. There are the warriors fasting all day in the heat, dancing and moving continuously all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were in the circle with them, you're sending your energy, you're present, and the medicine men all have their spirit guides, which are generally animals.
Right.
And the medicine man that we had at that ceremony, one of his was dragonflies, and we're on a hill high in Oklahoma in August. There's no water around. And during the most intense dance that I was present at, there were dragonflies all over.
Mm. Oh,
they were flying all around us. Mm-hmm. And Laughing Faces was also one of his spiritual guides. And the clouds, no joke, rolled overhead and looked just like
mm-hmm.
faces smiling and laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this intense connection that I had never felt in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of each dance, and I apologize if I'm not explaining exactly correctly in the right terms, somebody is chosen to start the peace pipe, and I was chosen to start that peace pipe. And there was definitely this intense connection I had with the music and the dancers and the energy that was being shared by the
mystical
circles.
Let me ask you, if you remember, so the feeling that you got, the sensation, would you consider it vibrational?
It was. Mm-hmm. It was very vibrational. Mm-hmm. It was peaceful. It was this overcoming sense of well-being and movement within.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I need to do that.
That's, you know, and that's exactly kind of bringing it full circle. Mm-hmm. That knowledge, that vibration, that mm-hmm. energy in us has been there all along.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes in very, very many different ways.
Yeah.
You know, some shamanic cultures use drumming. Some use mouth harps. They've got these really big, and bows, actually, they'll call them. Some of them use rattles and shakers. Some of them use hallucinogens. There's a lot of ways to get to that point where you're in that relaxed state or that altered
mm-hmm.
state, you know, that you can really find deep healing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, too, in that those synchronicities, you're talking about the mm-hmm. dragonflies, that's very, very common in the work. And I think what's kind of what's really interesting about it, and I guess to bring it back to your question, with the different animals, there's different powers. There's different, and by power, I don't mean like our context of power,
right.
like, you know, you own $1 billion company or something like that. I mean, power, like true, you know,
like energy power.
Yeah, yeah. And really messaging, I think, is a good way to think of it too, because, you know, Dragonfly has a very specific message. Mm-hmm. Its own nature and what it follows, just like the bumblebee. You know, their MO is all around getting honey, but there's a lot to say with that as well, as far as perseverance and, you know, how they handle things. Beaver, mm-hmm. you know, a beaver is a great constructor and a builder of things. And, you know, sometimes we have to rebuild our life. And so maybe the energy of and message of a beaver would come to you. But, you know, the bringing it full circle back, I think, is thinking of those animals and thinking of their message or their nature and how they can inform our lives. They're really just an example, I believe, that God or the, you know, Great Spirit, if you're talking to the Indians, or Source, if you're talking to the Vortex people, or, you know, whoever, they're examples that were put here for us and to help us. And so in that sense, it's and how I explained to my family was, it's not idolatry. It's just, you know, paying respect to the examples that God put around us to help us, you know.
How did they respond?
Well, it's funny because my cousin, who I gave that analogy to, she kind of scratched her head for a second. She's like, you know, that makes sense. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I didn't either until I looked into it.
Yeah.
But
I think it takes a certain kind of humility to be open to simple wisdom from the things around us and letting go of that, you know, the sureness that comes with a lot of the ways that we were taught. But mm-hmm. I think when you talk to a lot of people, well, I was thinking when you were talking that I love how our language betrays us because how often do we say things? I say this to people all the time. Does that resonate with you? Mm. And what we're actually saying is this true for you? Like, when I say this out loud, does your guts know that it's true?
Does it feel true?
Right. Like, that's what we're actually saying. And so I feel like sometimes our language betrays our actual gut level wisdom, and our logic just needs to step aside and just kind of get out of our way. Yeah. And just be quiet for a minute. And I think that drumming, that's one of the times that we really let ourselves do that. And there's beautiful. Just a lot of joy in it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and a great compliment to that is, especially in the Health Rhythms drumming classes that we'll do, or courses, it's there's what we call inspirational beats. There's an aspect to it. And so it's basically in those times, especially when you can't find words, mm-hmm. you know, say it on your drum. Mm-hmm. You can take any emotion. Think about, you know, anger is a great one, right? Because drums can pretty well take it, depending on the drum. But, I mean, generally speaking, you can beat the crap out of a drum and it's not going to break. Mm-hmm. You know, flute, probably wouldn't try that. But just saying. No one was a flautist, were you?
I was.
Yeah.
I think actually I knew that now that I started talking.
And I have a mental image of an angry flautist now, which is really entertaining.
Like but yeah.
It's interesting you say that about language, because mm-hmm. I have been fortunate enough to be able to teach in Brazil and Korea, and I have learned more about our English language by people who do not, English is not their first language. Right. They use the words so correctly.
Yes.
And so truthfully.
Literally. And it makes you reconsider what they actually mean
and
what we're actually saying.
And they are so right on where we are not.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like little kids. They, you know, as they're learning language, we have these terrible, like, come to Jesus moments about, oh gosh, that is what we actually mean.
They bring it right back to you.
They do. Yeah. They really do. That's so true. Okay. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for today. Matt, thank you so much.
This
has been super fun.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that this will not be the only time that you are with us on Reconceive. At least I hope so. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Reconceive. Don't forget to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. Follow us at Reconceive Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, and find us on our website at beyondstudio417.com/reconceive. And if anything you've heard today has made you wonder if it's time to reach out for help, please don't ignore that. Message us for assistance in finding a qualified therapist in your area. We would enjoy helping you in that way. From all of us here at Reconceive, see you next time.